You're listening to Blue Collar CEO, the podcast that's all about helping you build a better, more profitable, and more sustainable home service business. Each week, we'll cover a different topic that'll help you enable your company to move forward to success. And here's your host, Ryan Redding.
What is up, Blue Collar CEOs? It is good to have you tune in today. Hope you're doing good and things are going well. I'm not going to lie, it's been a little bit crazy in our office lately. We've got a lot of big things happening, a move that's in the works. Surprising that that takes a lot of energy and time on already a full day. But yeah, thanks for tuning in. I've got an awesome episode with somebody I can't wait for you to meet. I normally would do a really crappy introduction. I'm not even going to try this time. I'm just going to be like, hey, Cheryl, who are you and what do you do? So Cheryl, who are you and what do you do? That's when you say something.
I'm Cheryl Lanahan. I'm the owner of Plum Books and I do bookkeeping for plumbers.
This is awesome. And also, I just found out you love dubstep.
Well, I'm in a phase. Let's just say I'm in a phase.
Look, I think everyone needs an accountant who does dubstep. I'm just going to come out and say it. I feel like it probably helps people do better spreadsheets.
I totally get why coders listen to dubstep. I get it now. I'm like, I get it. I'm just here crunching.
What do they call it? It's like a flow state. Is that the whole like mental state where it's like the work just kind of like comes out of you because it's just so mechanical at that point? It's just like, you're just in the zone.
Yeah. There's no words distracting me. It's lots of bass. It's fun.
Yeah, like that. I'm not a very good DJ, as everyone now knows. So I was trying to think through when we first met, because you and I, we have a lot of mutual like shops that we work with at dpmarketing.services. I want to say, was it maybe a year ago or more?
It was. I was searching in my email and I found our appointment. It was last May. It was May of 2020. Yeah.
So one of the things I remember, I think you reached out to me. You're like, hey, I'm working with so-and-so company. I was like, hey, let's connect. And I remember like, we had a meeting and like we spoke on the phone and I just like fell in love with kind of your energy and why you do what you do. Because I got to be honest, for a lot of shops, managing the books or even just thinking about the finances to begin with aren't exactly the most fun part of their existence.
That's true. They don't love it.
So how did you get into doing books for, you're like not just like anything home service, you're like specifically plumbing. How did you land kind of in that focus?
I worked for a plumber, you know, your path finds you sometimes. And I worked for a plumber and he and I were going to build his shop into a big shop. So I got to be the second in command and do all the stuff and do all the research and figure out, you know, all the things that are involved in being number two at a plumbing shop. And it was a lot. And then life circumstances happened and I ended up moving to a different state. So at that time, we definitely didn't want to quit working together. So he just kept me on virtual. And I thought, well, I could probably do this for some other plumbing shops. I know some things. I went and I took a bookkeeping course. It was a fabulous course. And I kind of hit the ground running after that, after my interstate move. So I've been in business just 2 years now as Plum Books.
You work with shops all over the U.S. Anyone in Canada?
Nobody in Canada yet.
But all over the U.S.
Yeah, all over the U.S.
And everything I've seen that you put out is really top notch. Like it's really clear. It's really articulate. It's presented in a way that just a plumber can understand intuitively, because not a negative thing, but a lot of guys in the trades don't have like a formal academic education to think about like pro formas or right. It's just kind of a whole new world.
Right. And not only that, they don't want to and they shouldn't have to. They need the bottom line numbers. They need to know numbers they can take action on. And they don't really need to know all the rest of it. They need to know what's being handled. But it's not information that's going to help them make the decisions they need to make.
That's a really good point. So let me ask you this. What are, in your opinion, in your experience, what are maybe two or three of the most important decisions that a plumber, or maybe it applies to other trades too, but what are the most important things you think that they need to know about their books?
I think it's really important for them to split out their labor costs. I think often it's just all lumped into one category and they don't know how much they're spending in overhead, how much the owner's making, how much is in direct labor. And the direct labor is the guys in the field. And I think splitting that out will give them a much better idea of what they're spending for labor and if it's bloated anywhere.
And so you're even taking labor and you're saying there's, you're dividing in between like what I would call like an overhead labor, right? So someone in the mm-hmm. office who is paid regardless if a job is being done,
right?
And like a job cost labor. What sort of insight, if somebody's able to break out those two distinctions and kind of clearly understand how their business is utilizing labor, what sort of view or insight does that give an owner?
Well, if it's all in one big lump and you're paying, you know, 30% in labor, it's hard to tell where it is. And, you know, and 30% is pretty low. I had one the other day where we broke the labor apart and they realized they're paying 42% in their direct labor. And, you know, there's no way they can make a 50%, 60 gross income with that kind of top heavy labor, but it was all lumped into labor. So they didn't really know that it was too high. And, you know, you can look at your labor and say, well, it looks like I'm spending a lot in labor. Who do you cut back? How do you know if it's your techs or if it's your office people or if the owner's taking too much money? If you don't break them out, you know, you don't know.
It's really interesting because I feel like when I speak with guys who are just for the first time starting to understand their financials, up until that point in time, it's almost like an intuitive sort of approach they go into thinking about the business. Like they feel like things are fine. They might be busy, so they feel like things are good, but they don't really have the numbers or the anchors to know that they are doing good or in what ways are they doing good? What's your take?
Oh yeah, totally. Like guys end up going 3-4 years and they're doing a fantastic job and their business is growing and they're hiring and they're buying trucks and they're making it all happen. And right about in there somewhere is often when they're like, well, I don't have a really good handle on what's going on financially anymore. Like it's getting a little too big to just wing it. And they want to know more. They want to know, am I paying too much for my vehicles? And, you know, they want to know where their money's going and where they might be able to squeeze a percent or two out so that it ends up in their net profit instead of, you know, just leaving them.
A percent or two, if you're like sub a million, might not be a huge deal. But by the time you get to mid seven figures, eight figures, that a percent or two can add up really fast, right?
Well, even for the small shops, you know, it's all relative. So if you can save a couple $1,000 or if you can find a way to bonus your guys, you know, or find a way to do some of the things that you want to do, it's all relative.
Is there any certain KPIs that you feel like, hey, this set, for those who don't know, KPI is a key performance indicator. Is there any of those that you tend to keep on hand that you use like for your own sort of, these guys are really doing good in this or that? Or how do you think about those sort of benchmarks?
Yeah, the ones I use are, they're kind of generic and we change them around depending upon who I'm working with, what particulars they like to change. But to keep your gross profit over 50%, means your cost of goods and your direct labor have to total under 50%. So we usually try to hit your cost of goods at 24 and your direct labor at 24. And sometimes those numbers are hard to hit, especially in the tight labor market we have. And then you want to keep overhead wages around 15, advertising at about 5, vehicle at about 5.
Whoa, go back. Advertising at 5.
You know what? And these numbers can change. So those are some of the numbers that have been moved around, but everything else is at 15. And that's usually where the advertising can go up is people say, well, we're going to cut down on some of this everything else business and make room for more advertising.
Oh, I see.
But the percentages have to add up. And then to make 100%.
You're still 100% of a pie, right? So you can't.
Right. So to finish out the 100% is 12% net operating income. And, you know, I have totally seen guys who have said, okay, it's time to step up my game and we are putting money in advertising and they hit 10, 12%, but then their top line goes up and it all starts to smooth out and even out again. So
I actually just had a conversation with someone this morning who's struggling with the idea as marketing as a percentage of revenue, right? Because they're still kind of thinking about like marketing is like this insurance. It's like this expense that you don't want to have to pay, but you have to do
something. Your insurance goes up. It goes up pretty much the same as your percentage of revenue because every time you add a truck or a tech.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's interesting thinking about like marketing. Obviously, I'm biased because my background is marketing. I don't love it when guys go over 10% of revenue. That makes me nervous. There are some companies who can support it sustainably, but not many do it really smart. But so between 7 and 10, I'm like, okay, cool. Like I'm good. You're in growth mode. And then once they want to stabilize between 5 and 7, I tend to feel comfortable with. But it's all tied to revenue. So someone's like, hey, how many thousands should I spend a month on this? You're like, it's about what's the financial target you're trying to hit? Are you trying to hit 3 or 4 million? Like, what's your goal? Because then you just back in the math from there.
Yeah, I really like working by percentages just for that reason. You can back in the math and you can also forward out the math and like, okay, if I'm making this much now and this is how my percentages are falling, which is, you know, what I report on exactly. And then you put in a big number and say, well, what if I made this? And then see where the percentages fall and they're going to tell you real things.
There's a client you and I have in common who I won't say their name, but I remember when we were talking to them about the idea of budgeting, and the budgeting by percentage was kind of what we were pushing them to. Basically, don't have to write in a hard number, right? You don't have to put in a quantifiable sort of like, hey, it's 20,000 or whatever. You know your percentages. That's what you budget for, whatever that percentage is. And then you manage the exception to those goals, right? So if your revenue is more, if your job costs more or whatever, that's when you look at the outliers. You can scale the projection then pretty effectively. And you don't have to spend a lot of time diving in to go, well, what about this? Or what if I tweak this? It's just manage the exceptions to those percentages that you already know what they should
be. Right. And the tweaking, all the tweaking this or that, the world never works out like you think it's gonna, you know? It just never does. So sometimes a rough direction is good enough because, you know, for all your planning, it's not going to go exactly XYZ.
Sure. From my experience, a lot of guys are kind of apprehensive or uncomfortable maybe the first time they start bringing on someone to manage the books.
I must have a great reputation because I'm not experiencing that. I don't know.
That's awesome.
I don't know. Maybe it's because we go over stuff in the interview and I say, this is how we do things, and it doesn't cause people to freak out. Really, I show them, this is what I can give you. And they are like, I want that. So they're like, okay.
Without saying specifics, because that's not cool. What's like the most complicated or most stressful problem you've seen from your end?
I have a client who something happened with their QuickBooks account and it was a mess, and they got that straightened out. This was before I came along. They had issues with software integration, and then I was helping them and I made a copy of their QuickBooks account, but the software had a problem and we didn't discover the problem for months. So then months go by and the problem is discovered and we have to go back and just manually fix 5 months worth of problems. And then they made the switch from one software to another software, the scheduling software, scheduling and invoicing software, right in the middle of that. So it's been nothing but software drama with this company, but I think we are finally on track and ready to move forward. So the software integration can be rough.
There's a lot of like moving pieces on all of that. So I'm curious from your perspective, if you see somebody in one of these like Facebook groups going, do you guys use QuickBooks Online or QuickBooks Desktop? Or like, do you have an emotional response?
Oh.
Like, why are we asking these questions?
No, these are great questions and they should be asked. Absolutely. And you should know as much as you can before you start using a software or integrating one software with another, because it's never going to work out like the salespeople tell you, ever.
Never. I feel like every CPA I know has very, very strong opinions on either QuickBooks Online or the desktop version.
Well, most CPAs like desktop because they do different things than bookkeepers do. They're completely different things. For the most part, CPAs are, they do taxes and they're looking at tax projections and they keep your books like they're going to do taxes on your books. Here's an example. So if you are paying for vehicles and people are keeping your books properly, those vehicle payments are hitting your balance sheet and not your income statement. Your income statement is the same as a profit and loss. Okay. If you are paying yourself an owner's draw, which we should talk about later, if you're paying yourself an owner's draw, that is not hitting your income state. Income statement is hitting your balance sheet. So if you look at your income statement and you're like, all right, I have $10,000 down here at the bottom where it says net income, it's not including what you're paying in vehicle payments, and it's not including any owner draws that you're taking. So this happens a lot. I get clients that just don't know this is how it works. And this is something I can really help with because I move those things in very legal and logical ways onto the income statement so that everything can be accounted for in one place. so that an owner can look at their books, they can look at the income statement and know exactly what's going on and not have these weird things somewhere else where they belong for filing taxes, but where you can't see them just for day-to-day operations.
I think one of the points that you're making is that I think a lot of people are surprised that there are different means of accounting and reporting the financials for different reasons. That doesn't mean one is right and one is wrong and one is legal and not. It just means from a managerial standpoint, you need to see and understand a certain type of the information. From a tax reporting standpoint, it's see and understanding a different type of information. Most of accounting comes into organization. I think a lot of people think it's just math. I don't like math. No, it's not really math. It's really just how are you organizing the information of your company's existence to make better decisions from. I think a lot of people are surprised just by thinking about that.
Yeah. So I organize it all year this one certain way. And then at the end of the year, we put it where it belongs so they can file taxes.
So you mentioned owner's draw. I felt like you pulled out your soapbox.
Yeah, there's a thing. And, go get tax planning. Here's my advice. Get some tax planning. It'll cost you a few hundred bucks. It could save you thousands of dollars. I had a guy who was paying himself. He's making a great living, owning a plumbing company, paying himself plenty. And he was still filing as a sole prop. He had an LLC filing as a sole proprietor. And he was paying all these payroll taxes that he didn't have to pay. So he went and I was like, hey, you need to see a tax guy about this. And the tax guy said, oh, yeah, we got to fix this. And he amended some returns and got him thousands of dollars back because they switched to him filing as an LLC, filing as an S-Corp.
As an S-Corp.
Right.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe he'd been doing that for 10 years and nobody told him. And it's not right for everybody. So you got to see a tax professional and you can't just pick one willy-nilly off the internet. You need to get a personal referral from someone who's done good work for somebody else. Because CPAs, just like bookkeepers, they run the gamut. Some are great and some are not.
Yeah, it's totally true. And those numbers can be ran in the future, right? So somebody can actually do like, I know my CPA did essentially a cost-benefit analysis between the two, right? Of, hey, if you file as an LLC or if you file your LLC as an S-Corp, here's the pros and cons. And you can even see like the breaking point where under this revenue range, it makes sense to do this. And above this revenue range, it makes sense to do this. So you can more easily plan those things.
And it costs money moving forward. And it is money well spent.
To your point, like for DP, when we did it, it saved us tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah. And what'd you pay for that? Not that much.
Well, comparatively, it was peanuts. So let me ask you this. You said owner's draws. Do you think an owner should pay themselves a salary most of the time? Do you think they should just salary plus draw, all draw? Do you have like a knee-jerk sort of impulse?
Oh, yeah, that's a tax thing. And I don't do tax things. So the CPA would know, you know, what percentage to go where as far as between wages and draw. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. There's always kind of the trade-off.
But okay, the rule is you have to take a reasonable wage. That's the rule. So it's really, really ambiguous.
But the language tends to be, as I understand it, again, I'm not a CPA by trade, but as I understand it, it's if you were to have to hire someone to do that same job role, that kind of approximate salary equivalence. Isn't that right?
I don't know. We usually go with if you were a plumber. So for my guys, it's okay, you own a plumbing company. If you were just doing plumbing, what would you get paid? And that's about what we use for the reasonable wage.
Oh, interesting. So you don't really think about, well, you're at this management level, like a GM sort of function.
Not with the CPAs I've worked with. Sure. And again, that's not my call. That's a, you know, that's a tax preparer's call.
Sure. From your standpoint, maybe what's one of the most challenging parts of your job?
Challenging part of my job. I love my job. I absolutely love it. I think it's challenging when I have clients that are really busy and unable to get the things we need. I really like to do timely reporting. You should see it no later than the 10th of the month to get information. But if we don't get all the information in, it's hard to do that. We run reports anyway, whether or not we get everything we need. But like I ran one last week that they had like $30,000 in uncategorized transactions. It was just various things that we had questions about. So your reports aren't going to be very accurate if you've just got a whole huge amount in uncategorized transactions.
Yeah, especially if that's just a bunch of little transactions, that would be a pain in the rear.
Yeah, we try to automate as much as we can. But sometimes it's the difference between, did you buy tools with this giant parts house bill, or was it just all parts? Because they go in very different places.
Oh, sure. Sure. What for you do you enjoy most about what you do?
I love meeting with clients. I love spending time with them face to face, going over their numbers and helping their business. I love it when clients say, oh, I didn't understand this before and now I do. And I love that I can help people get the things they need to make their lives better and easier. You know, the other day it was just helping them go to their Ally account and find the information we need to get all their vehicles on the books correctly. And it was easy for me because I knew how to do it. And I could give them a little break by saying, let me help you do this. And I just, I like that.
So I'm curious, I'm sure that there's some like distinctions and like, obviously the financial model and whatnot, but why is it that you're like saying, hey, I do plumbing, besides like, you know, your space. Have you ever thought about doing HVAC or pest control?
I have an HVAC guy and I have an electrician. I think about it sometimes. I feel like there's so much work available in the plumbing space that why should I make my life hard and figure out pest control? And not just make my life hard, but I can do excellent work for these plumbers and not be diluted, you know?
It's like the hedgehog principle, right? You do one thing and you do it very, very well. I feel like you are always a wealth of information and knowledge and insight and just dang fun. If someone wanted to learn more about you or Plum Books, how would they find you?
Facebook, Plum Books with two B's, Plum Books, and plumbooks.net.
Plumbooks.net and Facebook Plum Books, two B's.
Otherwise, it's a fruit. I'm not doing anything with fruit.
I am really, really grateful for the time you're able to spend. I do have a couple of questions that are probably slightly more important if you're ready for some shooting from the hip things. You ready? What's your favorite ice cream?
Oh, I don't have favorites of things because I love a variety of things. So it all depends upon the time and the day. I think today it would be something lemon.
Something lemon. Yeah,
probably not lemon ice cream. Maybe like a gelato or something.
The question was about ice cream. Why are you changing the rules in the middle of my
question? See, you're on to me. This is the problem I have.
Okay, dog or cat?
I like cats.
Sorry to hear that. Dream vacation spot?
Oh, somewhere with a beach, with warm water that's not too freaking hot.
Here, so where is that? Where do you have a beach with warm water that's not hot?
I don't know where that is.
Are you just making up stuff now?
Oh, totally.
Like somewhere on the ocean with beautiful blue waters that snows twice a year.
No, not that cold. I just mean not like scorching heat, not 120 degrees. You know, if we could be a nice 90 degrees with not frigid water, it'd be lovely.
You prefer beach to mountain?
Yes.
Cheryl, thank you so much for your time. I know you're crazy busy, but I am really glad that you took the time to carve out to talk to everyone. Guys, if you want to learn more about Cheryl, please hit her up on her Facebook or her website. I can vouch for her. We've got lots of clients who can vouch for her. She does really, really solid work. She's a joy to work with. Cheryl, you're awesome. Thank you so much for your time. High five.
Thank you.
Blue Collar CEO is produced by Citizens of Sound. This episode was hosted by Ryan Redding, author of the book on digital marketing for plumbing and HVAC contractors, and founder of DP Marketing Services. This show also includes much help from Shelby Nichols. You can subscribe to Blue Collar CEO on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us online at bluecollar.ceo and find us on Instagram. Also, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review.